I want us first to recognize, and I want the RHS also to recognize, that we are attracting a lot of new gardeners. They are there. And people are engaging with plants more than ever. And we need to pat ourselves on the back and realize this.
Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Phil.
And this is The Underground, the podcast for garden sector professionals. Each week, we discover the trailblazers and innovators who are shaping the future of garden care in the UK. So, without further ado, let's get down and dirty.
This week, we caught up with Mr. Plant Geek himself, Michael Perry. After many years at Thompson & Morgan, Michael is now in high demand as a TV presenter, journalist, and podcast host, all with an infectious enthusiasm for plants and life. He also champions gardening for mental health and well-being, as well as promoting gender equality in gardening. We couldn't pass up such a great opportunity without picking his brains on attracting new gardeners into the sector and the challenges they face. We're absolutely delighted to welcome Michael Perry, possibly the busiest man in horticulture, Mr. Plant Geek himself. Michael, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Really good.
We're great. Thank you so much. Great to see you. So you seem to be everywhere within the garden sector.
No. So,
which is great. But I want to know if you're on a mission. And if so, what is your mission?
Yeah, I don't know. First of all, I'm probably... because of the way I use social media, I think you see everywhere I go because I use it as a showcase. And it's my CV at the end of the day.
Of course, yeah.
If someone sees me do something at a trade show in Italy, then a trade show in Spain will know that I'm open to travel and to doing, you know, speaking overseas, using a translator, this and this. So I think a lot of people are a bit shy with social media and they don't show the breadth of activities they're up to.
Yep.
So I think... potentially, I'm not any busier than anyone else, but I just make sure I show all the different facets of what I do. And I like to say yes to stuff because yes, I don't know, it just always challenges you.
Yeah, well, it can open so many other doors as well, you know, saying yes to things. Who knows what else is going to be there?
Exactly. So, totally. So when I was asked to go to Seattle to do this trade, public show, Northwest Flower Show.
Yeah.
And they said, can you help build a garden? And I never built a garden before. But of course, why would I say no? Let's try it. Let's do it. And I did it. And that euphoric feeling you get afterwards is just amazing. So, right, your original question, am I on a mission? My mission is really, I don't believe in 5-year plans. I don't believe in 3-year plans, even 1-year plans, because I think they could be limiting. You need to enjoy what you're doing, kind of stay focused, but kind of also have a lot of flex with what you think you might be aiming for. Because very often with a 5-year plan, you have this blinkered vision and you ignore everything on the side that could potentially, you know, because you don't want to be thrown off the plan. But maybe the right solution is to be thrown off the plan and go in a different direction, because you could be heading in a direction that isn't relevant in 5 years. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to really be flex. So I kind of stay very kind of like fluid. I would say my mission is really primarily to enjoy myself, to spread the love of plants. Brilliant. It's not necessarily, and I think this is controversial to some, it's not necessarily even to make money from that. But I think when you kind of cool off that kind of like, strong ambition that you need to make money, you need to do this, you need that. I think then things come to you because then you're less desperate. People want to work with you. And I just like to have a nice time. And I always want everyone else around me to have a nice time and to feel comfortable. And I think that might be one of the reasons why I'm then invited back onto things or recommended to other things. And just, I don't know, it sounds so cheesy and almost a bit egotistical, but just by being a nice guy. But you know what? Life is so much nicer when you're nice anyway. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I'm just doing what I do, really. Yeah.
But you have a lot of passion, though, Michael, you know, and that really comes out. And it's infectious as well.
Yeah. The passion is underlying it, and I want to share.
So, you know, it's not just that you're working hard, you have that passion and people really respond to that. And not everybody has that and that ability to kind of talk about what you do with such love and knowledge as well. So you've got to take a lot of kudos for that as well, that you are good at what you do.
Well, thank you. Well, I just think it's such an interesting industry and so much is not seen out there as well. And yeah, and I just want to share it as much as possible. So yeah.
Listen, Michael, I noticed in one of your social posts fairly recently, you mentioned the reason why you post a lot of these provocative type images isn't to attract established gardeners, but you're wanting to attract a new generation of gardeners. Can you sort of expand on what your thoughts are there?
No, this is a brilliant, brilliant question, actually, because I've always kind of viewed things that, you know, the old style of gardening is obviously very attractive to a certain audience that maybe remembers gardening with their grandparents. They got some kind of legacy kind of gardening that I certainly have from my grandma. But I also recognize that there were many different kind of categories where we can also recruit new horticulturalists from. And they could be indeed from cookery. It could be that there's a vegetable that you can only grow yourself in order to then use that in your cooking.
Okay.
So, for example, yellow beetroot, hardly ever available in the shops, you know, purple potted peas, things like this. So that is kind of one area. Arts and crafts. So obviously creating things with plants, that kind of brings in people from a art kind of background, maybe Kokodama, wall art, kind of this sort of stuff. But also horticulture has a real smutty side. So of course, you know, seeding, pricking out, all of this stuff. There's also all of the Latin names we laugh at college, like Rubus Cockburnianus, Sarcococca, you know. And so I kind of grabbed hold of that little area as well to kind of celebrate the smut and bring people in that kind of would be attracted to the humor in horticulture. And yeah, they kind of start off laughing about plants, but then they realize this is kind of such an interesting world that is actually quite laid back and relaxed because – you know, we laugh about plants and horticulture as much as we get serious about them as well. And so, I kind of then moved into that kind of provocative side as well as kind of the other kind of elements that I want to bring in. And I think in terms of the other end of the provocative, when I was working with the Grubby Gardeners with Perennial, we then did like the Naked Calendars, which was then bringing in that kind of Calendar Girls concept a little bit. So it was kind of like, again, how can we bring in a different audience each time? So in everything that I do, I'm not interested in recruiting more people that want to watch Gardener's World or people that watch Gardener's World. That's not really my kind of remit. It's bringing people from many different corners. You know, even with, in recent times, a lot of work in the industry I've done, showing machinery, you know, conveyor belts with orchids on.
Oh, yeah.
They seem really normal to us, but to the, I don't know, general public, in inverted commas, it's amazing. And it opens up a whole different world to them. So it's always been my vision to kind of broaden horticulture as much as possible and in the less obvious corners as
well. Yeah, amazing.
They're breaking down lots of barriers, but it's very much carry-on gardening. I love the humour, and I even have one of your T-shirts.
I think humour is a great kind of accessibility.
Yeah, definitely, and I think gardening can sometimes just be seen as really boring, something older people do. Would you say that lockdown has helped with that, brought on that new kind of generation? You've got all the social media influencers now in gardening, and I think you probably were one of the first to really kind of push that a bit.
Yeah, do you know what? It's very funny because I don't think lockdown started it. I think it was already starting kind of a couple of years before as we were starting to talk more about kind of mental health awareness, kind of in 2018, 19, this was becoming a discussion and plants, we were recognizing how they could help. You know, if you think about it, you know, the RHS had their urban shows, the previous ones at Westminster, they were before the pandemic. Okay. So I feel like there was movement happening there a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course, the pandemic then really, really accelerated and amplified that.
Yeah.
And I think people like myself and Ellen Mary, who you'll know, my co-host of the podcast, we were, it feels like weird to call us this, but I feel like we were like the kind of OG influencers a bit, like our kind of generation.
Yeah.
And like other people who are around at that time, because we kind of, we were kind of starting to use the platforms. For me, not necessarily for followers, but really just to show what I was up to as a portfolio, because at the same time I was moving to freelance work. So it was very useful as that kind of showcase. But also realizing that then the general public, yeah. I keep calling them this in inverted commas as if I'm not the general public, but you know what I mean? The home gardeners.
Yeah, home gardeners.
And they never really saw this behind the scenes stuff or kind of like how plants really worked. And so this was the first kind of portal they had to it.
Yeah.
And I think because of my work in the industry, I was then well placed to be sharing that. And so it really started as a portfolio. And then, like I say, the pandemic really then brought it, extended it, kind of now. You know, you guys, we were at the Garden Press event last week, and there is such a lovely community of influencers now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Who are ready to help advertise products, to spread the word.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I saw them this year and I felt like they really came of age because they're some of the most important advertisers in the room as well. And I think the industry has now got to that point where they've recognized that as well because they take their jobs pretty seriously as well. Yeah. You know, and many of those are part-time jobs on the side as well. Yep. We forget that. They're often people that are working in completely different roles in the day.
Yeah.
And then catching up with all of this in the evening. So, yeah.
What do you think the industry could be doing to help attract new gardeners as well?
I'm always a bit, when I answer that question, I want us first to recognise, and I want the RHS also to recognise that we are attracting a lot of new gardeners. They are there.
Yep.
And people are engaging with plants more than ever. And we need to pat ourselves on the back and realize this and harness them and bring them in and kind of not alienate them, kind of show them how to do things, but not in a patronizing way. And also appreciate that everyone will have a different reality. Everyone will engage at a different level as well. So, and not everyone will want to know the correct way to prune a wisteria. They might be happy to prune it incorrectly, but that might be okay because they're kind of just finding their own route sometimes. And I think because we've been very protective of our industry and our knowledge over many years, we kind of, I don't know, we get a little bit militant with the knowledge sometimes. And I feel, yeah, that's important. Things need to be done right. But I think if we step back a little bit and let people find their own way a bit and kind of we're a little bit more, I don't know, gentle with them, I think it could work. But I think there are a lot of people waiting to kind of be embraced into a world of horticulture, and it just needs to be as open as possible. Also to appreciate, we did a great panel at Glee last year talking about kind of like potential discrimination in the industry here.
I was there.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And of course it could be about race, it could be about gender, but it can also be about your level of knowledge or your culture or the way that you want to interact with plants. Because, you know, one example is we kind of have this vision that everyone should grow a beautiful xeriscape with Verbena bonariensis and wistful grasses. But maybe culturally you are very comfortable with marigolds, you know. So we need to appreciate everyone's got a different vision of what their ideal garden is. And I think, you know, the typical English garden is not always the answer. You know, so
that's good. Now, I think you do need to challenge the snobbery within, you know, garden designers. Oh, no, I'm never going to use yellow and that kind of thing. And I've been guilty of that. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a really good answer. Brilliant. So when do you find time to be in the garden? Do you actually, I know you have a lovely small garden. So do you have much time?
I do. Well, do you know what is the funniest thing? Like, the more you end up working with the product that you love, the less time you actually get to enjoy the product that you love, which is kind of like really ironic in a way.
Yep.
But I know that life kind of ebbs and flows, so I don't get much time to be in my garden at the moment. But I'm happy that I built it. It's a lovely showcase.
Yeah.
I do feel a little bit at the moment, though, not necessarily being in the garden, but sometimes I really felt the effect the last 10 days of being inside a lot. So, you know, forgetting about the garden for a moment, but even being inside for trade shows and kind of conventions and stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I ever necessarily kind of made that connection before, even though it seems very obvious. But I think that was a bit of an eye opener for me as well. So I think, just it's important that you take time out when you're on a trip as well. And of course, I guess sometimes I can live vicariously through other friends' gardens on the way, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, but I just know that at this point in time, there's a lot of travel, a lot of kind of like working in different regions. And so there'll be a time in the future when I'll get back to kind of sowing my own seed, et cetera, et cetera. But for now, like the garden needs to look after itself. Houseplants, I've chosen a lot of large houseplants. So they kind of, you know, they generally stay well watered for a week, 10 days anyway. So it's kind of, this is just how it is at the moment. I do miss it, but I'm obviously vicariously enjoying plants.
Brilliant. Thank you.
I mean, we've talked about your sort of passion for the industry and for plants. Mm. What is it about gardening or plants that you really enjoy? What is it that gets you in here?
Oh gosh, I don't know. Like, you just always need to have them around you. I don't know. Like, I could not imagine like a house, an apartment, a room without any houseplants, because they kind of like, they punctuate the room. And I think something with that is kind of my soul wanting them around me as well. And kind of how some people don't function. They don't even consider having plants around them, which is really strange. And being in some urban areas where there's literally no green, it's like, it just feels like there's a basic kind of very, I don't know, primeval need to be around those plants and to interact with them and to use them, enjoy them, share them as well. And yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like some urge that comes from within. I don't know. And I think that is also coupled up with, you know, in my career, I've obviously introduced a lot of new plants and kind of like developed, you know, marketing, kind of this. And so I feel like I got this passion for plants, but I'm also always very excited by new products, new innovations, and not necessarily just in plant. You know, I'm always excited when there's a new development or a kind of new coffee shop to try or so I love change, which is a lot of people are terrified of change, but I really thrive on it, to be honest. And I think that's probably why I don't have that 5-year plan and why I kind of, you know, always just throw myself into new things all the time. So I don't know, that's kind of the excitement and stimulus of life. I wouldn't want to get to the end of life and had every year identical, you know?
There's a lot of gardeners, I think we tend to live in the future because we're sowing seeds because we just keep thinking, oh, don't worry, soon it's going to be spring. You know, don't worry about the winter, it's not long.
I guess so, but there's also, but I think that's short-sighted because there's so much joy in winter as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I never want to wish for the next day because that means then what am I doing with today, you know? It doesn't make sense.
We're getting very philosophical here. I love it.
Okay, so we're going to change the subject slightly. At the HTA conference, there was some talk about just how bad new build gardens are because of, machinery, sort of compacting the soil, the fact that they're tiny, all sorts of things. And when you were doing one of your link pieces, you mentioned an idea for garden centres about creating a new home starter pack. I don't think it was something that you'd thought about in great detail at the time, but I wonder whether you've thought about that anymore and whether you could share your thoughts about what you were thinking.
No, I mean, I'd just be thinking on the spot with that. I'd thought about it over a number of years. I think I'd probably need to bang on the door of one of the garden center chains to make it happen because it could be relatively easy to make happen. It just needs to be, you know, a product set up in the garden center with the right inventory and it could be good to go. Ideally, it would be nice for that to be a partnership between the house building company and the garden center would be nice because then they'd almost refer you to a garden center or even it would be great to take that a stage further because I've never bought a new house, but you kind of buy it with, you can choose like the carpets, you could choose this and this, can't you?
Yeah.
And it would be nice if you could then choose like garden layout number one or garden layout number two. And what that could be an amazing industry for then landscapers to then come in, plant those. And I'm very sure when you're buying a new house, like I know it sounds crazy, but like a few extra grand to do the garden at that stage, you could easily then think about that, incorporate it into your mortgage at that point. And then start off with the very best garden in that space, you know. So it could be, a big movement, but it would take a lot to kind of get that moving. But I think, and you could obviously give people the very best start with their plants. And it could be they got levels of maintenance. So it could be, you know, if you want a pure low maintenance, then this is very much kind of like maybe gravel garden, xeriscape style, you know, just the garden does what it does, which would also need minimal preparation because you're already working on builder's rubble anyway. So, or it could be, right up to kind of like, you know, the premium edition where, you know, the garden is then fully, you know, rotovated, improved, you know, heavily planted. And that could even go a stage further into furniture and this and that, or, you know, I don't know.
I'm writing notes.
Hey, good. In Holland, they do kind of, actively do makeovers on their gardens kind of almost as a complete thing every few years sometimes. And
okay.
Yeah, the gardens are a little bit smaller, but they're happy to I think in Holland they kind of like in UK, we want to hold on to plants for years and years and years and kind of like we almost feel emotional if we kind of have to throw them away or cut them down.
Yeah.
But there they're happy just to treat it as another room of the house and kind of that might feel like a bit throwaway, but actually if you've got plants that are not really performing, then they're not necessarily doing any good for the environment or the wildlife. So, you know, get some new stuff in. And we're always, especially, you know, this kind of rolls into houseplants as well, but we're always like wanting to hang on to plants as they die until the very end. But kind of like, if we all hung on to our dead plants, then the industry would close, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a kind of, there's a soft spot in between the two, really.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love that.
Yeah, it's good to have a challenge, but I think sometimes you've just got to say, no, you're out. You're out. You're making me unhappy. You don't look good.
Exactly. Because you might spend yourself more heartache and energy, you know, trying to keep this plant alive sometimes. So there's a middle ground, I believe.
We're going to take a short break, but in the meantime, it's time for Kate's Corner, where we discover the musings and sage advice from the Gardener Guru. So, Kate, any tips of what we could be doing this weekend in the garden?
That's a good question, Phil. One thing I am going to be doing myself this weekend is I'm going to start warming up my soil. And that doesn't mean I'm going to be giving it a go with a hairdryer. So basically, what I found is this time of year, we've had so much rain, not so much cold, but because the soil is so wet, it does seem to be colder. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to cover it with some horticultural fleece. Some people use black plastic, some people use carpet. I try not to use carpet. A, it looks horrible. It's really heavy. And also there's often a lot of chemicals in carpet that then get leached into your soil. But horticultural fleece is really cheap. You can get it from most garden centres. You can double it, triple it, whatever. So I put that down, leave that for a couple of weeks, and that helps the soil warm up. So that means I can start my seed sowing just that little bit earlier. So seeds like carrots, beetroot, radishes, quick growing ones, they'll really benefit from a nice, slightly warmer soil.
Fantastic. Great. Well, there's something we can be doing then. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Phil.
And back to the show. So generation rent is a real issue for the gardening industry because people just don't want to necessarily invest in the garden because obviously if they're renting, you know, they feel that they're just throwing money away. So what do you think can be done about that to try and encourage people more into sort of looking after their garden or, you know, in that situation?
Well, I got two ideas here. One that just jumped into my head. So
perfect.
Maybe this is one we can get going. Well, first of all, it doesn't necessarily need to be an issue because I think we are loath to educate people in growing confidently in containers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we could show people confidently how to grow, say even like small fruit trees in containers, you know, a whole kind of, you know, harvest in a container, then you've easily got a movable garden that, you know, renting people can take with them when they go. So there are still things you can do in that space. It could be opening up the communication between like the landlord and the rentees of if they do want to kind of work in the garden, improve the garden, kind of meet that in the middle somewhere because, you know, it's nice for the rentee, but obviously the landlord also gets a benefit from having their garden improved a little bit. So we should be open to that.
Sure.
But there
sure.
could be another cool service, actually, which, like, if we invent it right here, right now, let's start the business, right?
Okay. This sounds great.
Stop the recording.
Well, like renting plants, but like renting almost like a whole garden or maybe renting, like, you know, you would rent like containers of plants like for weddings and parties and stuff, like, you know. Probably topiary, things like this, but it could be, I don't know, you rent like a garden that is then, you know, 2 meters squared worth of garden, which incorporates like maybe some seating, maybe like a stack of containers that kind of have some trees for privacy, maybe some bamboo in containers, maybe some, I don't know, they're underplanted with some lilies that are going to come through later in the season. And that kind of then gets delivered when you move in. And then kind of you almost like rent the garden.
Yeah, I like that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It just came to me. Good idea.
No, definitely. definitely. There's a few places that offer like patio containers, you know, for like summer homes, second homeowners.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that you kind of look after them during the seasons. So yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I like it.
So all is not lost. I think sometimes we're not good at kind of thinking outside the box sometimes, mm-hmm. maybe. Mm-hmm. And there are other ways to kind of make things happen sometimes,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. Something else I'd love to see. This is a little bit on subject, but also not.
Okay.
You know, like if you think of, you know, I've just been in Milan, you know, the Bosco Verticale, the yes. building with all the trees and shrubs
yeah,
on
yeah.
in the containers.
Yeah.
Right. And if you think about the Barbican has like integrated window boxes, right, into the buildings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do we not build now apartment blocks with integrated window box spaces?
I like that.
Yeah.
Because that would be an easy way to incorporate any greenery in someone's outdoor space.
Yeah.
It would be so easy to just kind of incorporate that so that a window box could slot into that. Ideally, it would be great in the UK to have some sort of universal window box
yeah.
that everyone could go with. Because I believe this kind of, you know, wraps us up with something we spoke about at the beginning, this new range of influencers that we have mm-hmm. who are gardening indoors.
Yeah. Yes.
They at some point will want to gravitate outdoors. Mm-hmm. And if they haven't got an outdoor space, they got a window.
Yeah.
So that is then, you know, the potential for those people to then be, right, you know, we can recruit them for our kind of outdoor horticultural world. But at the moment, I think they feel like there's a barrier. It's like, oh, I haven't got an outdoor space, but kind of,
yeah.
well, your apartment's probably got windows, right?
Yeah.
yeah.
So yeah, something is possible. I don't know. I think there's potential for this kind of in-between garden a little bit more.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I think your idea saying about the window boxes having a sort of a conventional size, whether they're all the same sort of thing, you know, I think that mm-hmm. that's quite interesting. Mm. I mean, the chap who invented the shipping container actually gave away the plans mm-hmm. for that shipping container and didn't commercialize mm-hmm. it because he saw it was going to totally transform the logistics industry. Mm-hmm. And it did, you know, the things have never been the same since. Suddenly you had mm-hmm. a whole infrastructure that was based around this standard shipping container size. And, you know, mm-hmm. I wonder whether similar sort of thing could happen with window mm. boxes.
Yeah. I like that, Phil.
Yeah. That'd yeah. be cool.
That's great. Lots of food for thought here. Lots of food for thought. So moving on, so what do you think are the biggest challenges that are facing the garden industry sector now?
Well, a few things we talked about. I think kind of not recognizing that new people are wanting to get into horticulture and they're there, they're waiting on the doorstep,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but we often don't see that. And we're always like, got to get more people into horticulture. La, 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 la. They're already here.
Yeah.
They're just waiting to be welcomed. So
right.
that would be one part. I think kind of that lack of, I think maybe the snobbishness that can run through horticulture, which then kind of alienates new beginners, et cetera,
right.
Appreciating that people interact on many different levels. I think obviously kind of the environmental kind of changes, sustainability, peat-free, all of that kind of area. But having spent a lot of time in Europe over the last few years, having just spent a week in the US, you know, I don't want to comment too much on their markets and kind of how they're responding to peat free, et cetera, but I have to say, I feel like in the UK, we should pat ourselves on the back a lot more with how good we are at sustainability.
Yeah.
And I feel like we constantly have this kind of negative edge to it that we're never doing enough. We're mm. this, this, and this. And there's a whole kind of like guilt that kind of runs through that. And I don't feel personally that making people feel guilty or negative about stuff is the best way to get the best movement out of them.
Right.
And so I feel like if we celebrated where we're at, I think that would breed more and more positivity and kind of like, yeah, and continue us on the brilliant journey we're on. And we are really, I don't know if we step outside of this enough, but I feel like we're really leading the world with a lot of that
yeah.
stuff. But I don't feel like anyone ever tells us that.
Do you know what? I'm so glad you're saying that because I just think, yeah, we're so British, aren't we? We just always have to give ourselves a hard time.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, and I just feel social media does that, you know, the Facebook groups, don't do this, you mustn't be using that. And you just think, as long as people are putting some plants in their garden, that's a start, you know? And yeah, you're right, we need to celebrate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also like telling people off for everything is not going to kind of welcome them in, if you know what I mean, as well. So Yeah. And so I feel like, yeah, to celebrate kind of that, obviously the different mediums we're growing in, we need to kind of understand those, like, but also get this across to the consumer in the clearest way as well. I think sometimes we're so kind of, we're very emotional about a lot of the things that we kind of don't then get the point across very clearly. And so then, you know, for newbies, they really are just stood there like, I don't know where to turn. I don't know what to do. I don't know what people are going to think of what I do. And yeah, and so this is really not helpful at all. And the likelihood is they're probably going to give up, probably not even use the wrong thing. They're probably going to give up rather than that, you know? So then you've lost a new recruit. Yeah. That doesn't help anyone. Absolutely. So yeah, so I think kind of that is all part of simplifying and welcoming, educating and welcoming, I would say.
I really love that.
I think the educating thing is... It really resonates with me. I'm not a gardener. Okay. I enjoy spending time in the garden. Yeah. Kate's the horticultural person on this podcast. You know, I come from a agency background.
We're getting you there, Phil. We're getting you there though.
I'm getting there slowly but surely. But I think the education thing is really important, because I think at the moment you get started, you get excited. But then you watch something like Gardener's World or whatever, and everything just looks completely out of your league. Mm. You know, it's almost feels like unobtainable.
Mm, totally.
And so, you know, I think being able to have something more at that sort of introductory level, so say, you know, well, you don't need to be aiming for that. You know, you just need to be concentrating on your own thing. And
I appreciate everyone has a different reality and a way that. They will want to garden to make themselves feel good as well, you know?
Yeah, don't feel bad if you can't have 6 compost bays.
And also, and I think where a lot of people forget is a lot of people will be gardening in apartments or balconies. And I think this is really missed out of a lot of the education, because actually you are not going to have anywhere to store a bag of compost. So maybe then you're looking to compressed compost or like what I call flat pack compost. And also, there's going to be a lot of different considerations. You will be growing in containers.
Right.
You might need to consider the weight of those containers. So that might make a difference to the medium that you're going to use as well. So I think there's a lot of holes. We imagine that everyone is in, you know, a beautiful cottage garden. And also, while I'm at this cottage garden thing, I got this like this vision. And I've done a lot of work in Japan over the years. So bear with, this is a good story. And like in Japan, everyone's got this vision of how everywhere is like this Zen garden and like raked gravel here, and here. And of course, there are gardens like that. They tend to be kind of, you know, like gardens open for the public or kind of like high class gardens. Uh-huh. Most people's gardens are kind of like this hodgepodge of lots of different pots and kind of like wild areas, and really not even that tidy, I shudder to say.
Yeah.
But I think similarly in UK, everyone's got this vision of an English cottage garden, delphiniums, lupins, verbena bonariensis, lavender.
Right.
But English gardens don't look like that. And people actually, home gardeners don't necessarily even want to achieve that sometimes, because what an English gardener wants their garden to look like is they want it to be accessible, utility. They probably want to have some grass. So we need to meet them in the middle with that. But they're probably going to have a path, a washing line, you know, some Hebes they bought at B&Q. Yep. They're probably going to have solar lights. So why do I not see solar lights represented on Gardener's World, I wonder, when most people in the UK would use them? So I think sometimes the vision of what an English garden is and what people really do is a very different thing. Mm-hmm. And likewise, the vision of the English garden and apartments where people only have this space and they might use, you know, heaven forbid, an ugly ornament or solar light, but it makes them happy, you know? And we've always got this vision of what it should look like. And we got to drop that, really, because people like solar lights. And so do I, and I'm not embarrassed.
I love that. I love that. Let's get rid of the snobbery. I love it. So I know you're excited about so many things, but is there anything that you are most excited about at the moment? What's really floating your boat?
I don't know. I guess I'm quite excited that March, I don't have to travel too much. So that's nice. February, I always knew it would be a lot because I was, I'd been in Germany for IPM and then I was in Holland and then Seattle and then straight to Milan after that. And it was like, oh my gosh. But, you know, months are all different as well. And I think probably Yeah, I'm looking forward to March, kind of like as everything kind of warms up, you know, you start to then see more daffodils come through. Mm. I'm not going to go to Holland too early this year. I often go in March and it's not as kind of exploded as I imagined. Right. So I then usually have to go back a couple of weeks after.
Right.
So I'm probably going to wait till April.
Okay.
So I'll be spending a lot of time at the Kirchenhof then, go around some different bulb fields, etc. I'm actually doing I'm on a cruise on the river in Holland, doing some talks on a cruise in the middle of April. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to that. That will be cool. And again, something that I'd never done before. I easily could have said, no, this is not my bag. Yeah. But kind of, yeah, I was like, yeah, all right then, you know. And that's how you learn and push yourself. So, yeah. So that would be the next thing. But obviously through the summer, there's, you know, the RHS Urban Show. I'll be there. Tatton Park, Gunners World Live. Back in Japan in September for container masterclasses, which is cool.
Amazing.
Yeah, probably fit some more things in. Maybe US again in August for the GardenCom event, which is like their Garden Media Guild in the US.
Oh, right.
Really amazing. So much learning potential there as well. Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be busy, but I love doing it all. There's nothing I do that I'm like, oh, why am I doing this?
Brilliant.
No, not at all.
So, I mean, obviously you've got quite a broad overview and an amazing insight into what's going on in the industry. Mm. What do you think's the next big thing?
Oh, I love those questions. a few different things, really. I think we might have to, you know, obviously over the years with Thompson Morgan, my work had been a lot in like introducing new bedding plants, patio plants, basket plants.
Yeah.
I feel like over the next few years, we might need to fight our corner a little bit with those because people might start to look at like, oh, are they a good use of space? Are they sustainable? How are they grown? This, and this. So I feel like we'll need to put more focus on bedding and patio plants that are good for pollinators, for example. Yep. So probably using biddens a lot more, Calabrachoa, the miniature petunia, the million bells that they often call it. So kind of focusing on those.
Okay.
Maybe pairing up a lot of those annual plants with perennials here and there to kind of almost like soothe the blow a little bit, you know. So plants like the dwarf Alstroemeria, like Intercantia, they're really brilliant. They flower for about 6 months of the year, but they act like a bedding plant. So they're kind of like the bedding plant you never need to pull up.
Okay.
So I feel like kind of maybe, changing what we classify as bedding and how we use it potentially.
Yeah.
I think also with container work and just blurring the lines a bit, I think we've been kind of too stiff with, you know, oh, this is a herb. You wouldn't use it as a filler in a basket or this, and this. And also houseplants, you know, what stops you using a houseplant outside in a basket, you know, and kind of that sort of stuff, but also, you know, planting plants that are more durable for wet, dry conditions as well.
Yeah.
You know, ideally plants that are okay with both would be a good idea. Things like Tolbachia, for example, which is great, super durable plant, great for landscaping as well. So, yeah, and obviously there's a lot more breeding has gone into shrubs the last few years that has really kind of exploded. So I think an increased focus on those for their longevity, colorfulness as well, and kind of, yeah, using them in borders, but also in containers as a kind of filler or kind of, you know, maybe not replanting your whole container each year, but maybe there's a big shrub in one corner and you replant a portion of it, which is then kind of, you know, a little bit more kind of palatable for some people that don't always want to buy new plants or don't feel like they want to replace all of their plants every year. So,
well, I think that's good because, you know, with the whole peat-free, trying to get people to use bagged compost for containers, whereas rather than putting on your borders, you know, bagged compost is for containers really, isn't it? And we just want to try and just get people using peat free for their containers, not just chucking it in the garden. So yeah, watch this space.
All right. So this is a bit more of a fun question.
Those questions were all fun.
Do you have a favorite tool or gadget for the garden?
Do I have a favorite tool for the garden? Just say my hands.
I like that.
I usually start off doing things with tools or this, and this, and I just end up like either losing it or just like realizing that I'd got more agility in my own hands.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say that really, which sounds a bit like lazy and potentially a bit feral, but
there goes your contract with Wilkinson Sword.
Yeah, I know. But no, I would say, yeah, like hands. But obviously, I think like, you know, like the hori-hori knife's become so popular last few years. Not necessarily the hori-hori knife, but some of the tools that have been based around that, like some of the like wider versions, like that are more like trowels, I think they offer a lot of different solutions as well, but they need to be bright colored so we don't lose them.
Yes, absolutely.
Luminous. Why does nobody actually make fluorescent tools? That would be a good idea.
That is a good idea. Right, there we go. I've got so many job prospects coming up.
We got a lot of ideas today. We need to set up a company.
So keeping on the kind of the lighter theme, do you have a plant that will always put a smile on your face, however kind of down you might be feeling?
I think any plant does that. I often would say when someone asks me my favorite plant, which is like a similar question, I would just say iris, because iris are such a broad family. There's an iris for every month of the year. They're probably every color of the rainbow, every continent, every type, from small to big to, you know, the iris confuser, the bamboo iris as well. You know, I think they're one of the most fascinating families that is also, to us in the UK and Europe, one of the most accessible to grow as well. So iris is my final answer.
Lovely.
So that's your desert island disc plant.
Definitely. And also, are they edible? No, but there's one where the root smells of beef, isn't it? And that could be nice.
Really?
To, what a smell beef on a desert island. I don't know.
And who wouldn't? Well, that does wrap it up nicely.
Yeah, thanks so much, Michael. Really appreciate you coming on and chatting with us today. It's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's been lovely.
Oh, thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. We really do appreciate you listening and want you to get involved. So if you have a topic you'd like us to cover, drop us a line. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the Underground, head over to Facebook and join the discussion in the Underground Podcast Group, or sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant, and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at writeobarra.com. Thanks for listening.